and say this is Discovering Buddhism, the module is Introduction to Tantra. And by the way, my name is Don Brown. I've been teaching Discovering Buddhism since the beginning of beginningless time. It feels like that. And anyway, I love it. And it forces me to study and think about these really great teachings that we're going to explore. And the purpose, I mean, my job is really to kind of warm you up for Venerable George, who's going to be here the next two Monday nights, but also is for you to sort of begin to see if Tantra is something that you might want to learn more about, to maybe even begin to practice. And it is, it's the part of Buddhism that we never talk about at Kadampa Center. You know, we're very sutra oriented, but it's the most profound and powerful teachings of the Buddha. And in fact, it's only through the practice of Tantra that we can become enlightened. So it's at least worth learning about. And then if it sounds too difficult to practice, at least have the aspiration. Maybe you can develop an aspiration to practice. But the other thing Linda likes to say is that these teachings are offered freely. Linda, am I doing this right?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I mean, everything that's done at Kadampa Center is offered freely. It really depends upon the generosity and kindness of the students and the teachers. And I mean, so many people are involved in keeping this place running. And most everybody does it on a volunteer basis, so amazing. And then here we are in the middle of Raleigh, North Carolina, where there's actually a Tibetan Buddhist meditation center. Like, how unbelievable that is. It's kind of cool. So, let's see. The ladies are in the back are still fiddling around with the, trying to figure out how to get on YouTube. Is that
no,
where
we're on YouTube.
Okay.
We're just trying to figure out audio.
Trying to figure out audio. But so that you guys can talk to me and ask questions, is that what the, is that what you're doing?
So, John, did you want to start with the video, that introduction video?
Yeah, let me, let's do that, because we may be over, we may get a little bit past 8 o'clock. I mean, Robbie thinks 7, 8 is enough, but it won't work. We'll probably be here till 8:30 tonight. But it won't be beyond that, I promise. So we're going to start out with a video that's sort of standard FPMT video, a video on introduction to Tantra. But before, I have a few simple questions. Is the video ready?
When I can get it ready.
All right, well, let me ask a few simple questions. Are you having a good day? If you're having a good day, you don't have to raise your hand. You know if you're having a good day, right? Good. So, why? Why are you having a good day? Are you having a bad day? And if you're having a bad day, why? Tomorrow, would you rather have to, would you like for tomorrow to be a good day? Yeah? I don't see anybody saying no. Yeah, so most of us would like tomorrow to be a good day. So the real question here is why? Why, if you had a good day, why was it a good day? And if you had a bad day, why was it a bad day? Think about that. It is so important. It's the most important question. It's why the Kadampa Center exists, by the way. because good days and bad days, we ordinarily judge the good days and bad days based on externals, don't we? Like so-and-so said they loved me, or I got a raise at work, or this good thing happened, or this bad thing happened. We're so externally focused. But we all know in our heart of hearts that the real cause of a good day is our mind. It's our mind. It's so important. The cause of the bad day is our attitude, is our mind. How our mind interacted or interpreted whatever experience it was. I mean, you know, I've been to Disney World when it was like hell. You know, when it was not a good day. My kids were not having a good time and they were making it very interesting. But everybody else seemed to be happy. It's not the cause of happiness. So the real cause of happiness has to do with our mind. And if our mind is that important, then it's worth investing some time and effort in developing it, because it is the essence, the quality of this really short life. I mean, some of us are older than others, but hey, it could be over any minute, right? I mean, death is definite. Everybody's going to die. Could be any minute. The time of death is completely random. And again, the only thing that matters at the time of death is the only currency, as I like to say, the only currency that we can spend at the end of our lives are those spiritual imprints that we put in our mind. And so the mind is so important, not only from day to day, but as we get toward the end of our life and at the end of our life, our mind, again, is going to be so important. Do we have a peaceful death, or do we have a freaking out death? And do we plant the seeds for a happy future life, or for a really future life of problematic, let's say that, difficult? So we have this amazing potential that Tantra actually is sort of built on, this notion that we have something called Buddha nature. So you ready to go? So I'm sure that will come up in the video. I haven't seen the video in a while, but I'm sure this will come up in the video. But in a real sense, something called Buddha nature is what Tantra is all about. It's developing. I'm sure that will come up in the video. I haven't seen the video. It's potential in a while, but I'm sure this will come up in the video. But
the guidance to follow by parents.
Audio.
Okay. John, you can just start teaching. They can't hear me, and they can't, the video's messing up.
Okay.
So it's just all you right now. There's not much I can do.
Okay.
We can hear you.
Hello.
On microphone.
Technology has failed us. How could that be?
Oh.
What's going on? Is it working then?
Oh, maybe they can hear me.
Hello?
Okay, John. You can start when you're ready.
Okay. If somebody wants to ask a question, how do we work that out?
They can either raise their hand or type it in the chat box.
Okay. See, waiting. The chat box. Admit. That's good. All right. Well, I know you didn't come here to watch us how to solve technical problems. So we started out asking some basic questions about happiness and how we, in a sense, look outside ourselves for happiness. We look at we sort of outsource our happiness to external things like people, situations, and so on. And if things are going well, we call that happiness. And when things are not going well, we call it misery or unhappiness. But the main point is that the chief determinant of our happiness or our suffering is our mind. And our mind can be cultivated. Our mind can be trained systematically. And, our teachers have going back to the time of Shakyamuni Buddha, these teachings have been codified, you might say. So we have an unbroken lineage of the actual teachings of the Buddha up to the present day, which are designed really for one thing, and that's for us to achieve what this element, this thing we call supreme happiness or enlightenment. Okay? And then how in the, what is enlightenment? I mean, and do we have, most of us don't have any sense of our potential. Most of us, I've said this before, because I've taught this class before. I think we all have, if I said, well, you know, you could get enlightened and you don't have to suffer. Yeah. Look at that too. Oh, look there.
It looks like you're just looking down.
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, I was looking down. Okay. So, yeah. All right. So here we are. So let's start out with a little moment of kind of separating. At least I need to do this. My 10-hour workday from that time to right now. So let's take a few minutes to one of the methods to really to begin to achieve happiness is what we call meditation. Now, I want to see, does anybody out there know, want to give me a one-sentence definition of meditation? I want to see if anybody's, all you DB people should be all over this, like white on rice. So who knows what meditation is?
To become familiar with.
Okay. I don't see any hands. I don't see any,
John.
Oh, here we go.
Call on John.
What now?
John.
John. How do I do that?
It's a practice of controlling your mind.
Okay, go ahead, John.
Go ahead, John. Speak up.
The practice of controlling your mind and becoming familiar with it.
Everyone is able to look at yourself in the... Okay. I'm not able to hear anything really from anybody, so I'm gonna just go ahead and keep talking. So meditation, Alex Berzin calls it building up beneficial states of mind, but it's accustoming our mind to positive beneficial states of mind, and so you know we all know how to accustom ourselves and focus on negative mind states. You might say we know how to meditate on selfishness and anger and you know, these sort of destructive mind states, and you could, and we can actually become quite single-pointedly focused on that. But that's not meditation. Meditation here we're talking about is building up beneficial states of mind, and so we're training our mind to be accustomed to these positive mind states. And it takes work. It takes a lot of work, and it takes a lot of self-discipline. Takes years and years of practice, and then gradually things begin to change, but not quickly. It's not like taking a pill. So we're going to do that for a few minutes. I want you to just sit up in your chair, and we're going to practice breathing out and breathing in. And as you breathe out, and just through your nostrils, imagine that you're letting go of all of the negativities of your body, speech, and mind in the form of black smoke. And you can even think, you know, look, you can go breathing out. You know, you can imagine, you can say that word silently to yourself, breathing out. And you just imagine all of this negativity in the form of black smoke going out. And as you breathe in, you breathe in this purifying white light that is symbolizing all of the positive qualities that we already possess, but like fully developed, and our bodies completely filled with this purifying white light. And let's breathe, and I'll let you do this on your own, where you breathe out black smoke, symbolizing negativities, and breathe in white light, symbolizing positive qualities. And always before we do any practice, very important to remember the motivation for the practice, that we practice in this tradition, we practice in order to develop our minds, eliminate our shortcomings, our faults, in order to be a perfect servant, to be able to serve others in a perfect way, and to help others actually achieve their full potential, so-called enlightenment. So the goal here is to help others, and we're using meditation as a method to do that. It's the Mahayana motive. We'll do this for about 5 minutes. Okay, you can relax your concentration. So in the beginning, by the way, can you hear me? Can you hear me okay? Yeah. Wait, hand up if you can hear me.
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Don, is your mic that you have on, is that on?
Yeah. It is. Now. Uh-oh.
Okay. All right. Just keep teaching,
Don. Keep teaching. Okay. Well, I'm just going to roll with this. So anyway, here we are. So we need, again, I really, we are going to end up talking about Tantra and just a little bit about this class. Tonight, I'm just going to get the ball rolling a little bit. And we were very fortunate in that Venerable George Chernoff, who's has been I've known George for 40 years, huh? Long time. Actually, 41 years, 41 years. Anyway, met him at Copan many years ago. And George has got a master's in physics from MIT, believe it or not. He's kind of he's a bright guy, and he's studied extensively in this tradition, and he's just finished a three-year, three-month retreat in the mountains of North Carolina, and he's been teaching. I was talking to him last night. He's been teaching the centers in New York and in Washington, D.C., teaching different things. But then next Monday night, and I also think this coming weekend, is he going to be teaching this weekend?
I'll have to check.
We'll find out. But next Monday and the following Monday, George is going to be taking over this class, doing a much better job than I could ever do, and helping to answer questions that you might have about Tantra. And I asked him specifically to teach us how to use tantric visualizations and practices as we meditate on the topics of the Lam Rim. So that's a kind of a specialty, I think, within the FPMT. Lama Yeshe and Lama Zopa wanted us to, and taught is the early students and later students too, how to incorporate Tantra as we were meditating on Lam Rim topics. It's kind of cool. So I wanted George to do that, and he'll be here next week. We'll be Zooming him in from his house in Western North Carolina mountains. So getting back to the original question of, did you have a good day? Did you have a bad day? And we all of us, of course, we want good days. We don't want bad days. We all want good days. And yet so much of our happiness and unhappiness, I heard one person say, outsource it. We blame it. We blame other people. If so-and-so is mean to me, then they ruined my day. And and if things go really well, then I had a good day, and yet we're missing the main point of it, and that's that the mind is the determinant. A happy, peaceful, contented mind can have a good day every day, no matter what the circumstances are. And we are, we're in this election cycle, and it's happening tomorrow, and a lot of people are uptight about that, but that'll be over, and then there'll be other things that'll come up, and it's just the nature of samsara, up and down. We're caught in this uncontrolled process of causation, and yet and we're so fixated on trying to fix everything out there, not realizing that the ultimate source is our own mind, and beginning to put the effort in developing our inner qualities, our inner strength, which takes a profound effort over time. So we need to commit to our happiness and peace. And one quote I heard that's worth memorizing is, happiness and unhappiness are states of mind. Happiness and unhappiness are states of mind. Therefore, the real causes cannot come from outside the mind. So happiness and unhappiness are states of mind, and the real causes cannot come from outside the mind. And I invite each of us to look and see how we spend our time, and are we working on the real cause of happiness, which is a calm, peaceful mind. It's a mind that basically lives the Dharma. You know, the Lam Rim, the teachings, the stages of the path. If we could actually even understanding these teachings intellectually has a profoundly beneficial effect on the mind. But to actually meditate on them and feel, gain a feeling for these teachings such that it changes our attitude. I read, when I was preparing and thinking about this class, I remember a quote that our nanny brought, and I can't remember. I mean, other people might remember the exact words of it, but something goes along like it goes like this: I don't remember what you said, but I remember how you made me feel. Think about that one. I don't remember exactly what you said, but I remember how you made me feel. Because these feelings, positive and negative, become very memorable. And, this class in particular is very difficult. Of all the classes that I've taught of Discovering Buddhism, I find it really difficult for people who don't have the time and the effort to do some tantric practice to develop any real feeling for it. And I don't like to sit up here and just feed you, lots of information. But unfortunately, that's the position I'm in, at least for the moment. But our ultimate goal, let me look out here. Ultimate goal is to achieve enlightenment, and most of us have no idea. Like, we can think of, we talk about enlightenment as a state where all of our faults have been eliminated, and all of our positive qualities have been developed to the nth degree. But we can't even imagine what that would be like. And furthermore, we don't think we can do it. We have this, even though the teachers say, and actually meditation practice is to help us get in touch with our own Buddha potential. But at the end of the day, if I said, hey, do you think you could really stop your own suffering? Third Noble Truth, right? Nirvana. Do you think you really have that potential to stop all your suffering and to develop yourself to become like completely happy 24/7? Do you think you have that potential? Most of us would go, heck no. I have a hard time just making it through the day, much less, this grandiose notion of enlightenment seems so far out there, so unattainable. And yet, in Tantra, we began to play with the idea of enlightenment as not something in sutra. It does seem really far out there. In Tantra, we began to play with the notion that enlightenment is not some far out distant land. It's actually happening right now. And that we're enlightened right now in this moment. We're taking the future as a result of our enlightenment, which could take countless eons, right? And we're imagining using tantric methods, accessing subtlest levels of consciousness, and beginning to imagine that we actually have our fully developed Buddha potential manifesting in the world. And we become a completely different person when that happens. We're not an ordinary being anymore. We're a really special being. The Tantra is about that. I mean, it's all about a lot more. I mean, we have, you know, I've got my rosary around here. You know, we're all the time chanting, you know, Om Mani Padme Hum. I think Geshe was teaching that last night or the other day, the meaning of the different mantras. So each of the Buddha figures, and if you look at, you know, like I said, we don't talk about Tantra very much here at all. But if you walk into the center, my gosh, I mean, you've got Green Tara over here, and the 21 Taras are over here. These are all these female Buddhas, manifestations of the female aspect of enlightenment, various aspects of the 21 Taras. And then we have over here, Kala Chakra, which is a manifestation of it's a manifestation of highest yoga tantra. There are four different levels of tantra, which I might as well say a little bit about it now. Anyway, there's action, performance, yoga tantra, and highest yoga tantra. So, you know, one of the things in the sutra path, well, not so much in, I used to live in Thailand for a while, so I lived in three different monasteries in Thailand for weeks at a time. And I know that one of the main practices is to try to avoid coming into contact with anything that might excite the senses. And so, for example, when we would go on begging rounds early in the morning, the lay people could hang out with the monks when we'd walk around as the monks went on begging rounds to get the food for the day, because they only ate one meal a day. And they would always have their eyes cast downward, not looking up. And part of the point of this was not to let the senses get aroused, not to let attachment arise. Because if you saw something beautiful, a beautiful person, whatever, then you wanted to avoid that. So that was the Theravada approach. And then in the Mahayana approach, at least in the sutra path, there's not such an aversion to attachment. I mean, but there's also this understanding of emptiness, which, so we don't get hooked by attachment, quite like we would, if we didn't have some sort of understanding of emptiness. But then, interestingly, in Tantra, we actually looking for pleasurable experiences. We're actually, we want the energy of attachment. We want some level of this mind that projects positive qualities, exaggerates positive qualities on things. We want the attachment to arise, and then we work with that attachment to transform it into a blissful wisdom consciousness that is like focused single-pointedly on that pleasurable, focused experience. So again, in Tantra, it sounds weird because it sounds like, I mean, even in the second noble truth, what's the cause of suffering? Well, it's delusions and karma, but the principal delusion that we're trying to uproot and avoid is what? Attachment, clinging desire. And yet here we are in Tantra, we're actually embracing everything that is desirable. So in the lowest level of Tantra, they talk about working, and they use the example of men in a relationship, man and woman. So for example, if you see an attractive person, then the mind is kind of lifted up by that energy a little bit. And that's the lowest, that's called in the action Tantra. So that positive energy that you might experience from seeing an attractive person, you can use that to help develop your mind by using the practices of deity yoga and understanding emptiness. I'm not going to go into that now, but I'm just telling you, these are how the four levels of Tantra work. And the levels, so then after we have some stability in working with that level of pleasure, then we imagine that we're actually holding hands with this person. So now there's a little bit more excitement, a little bit more happiness, a little bit more bliss, a little bit more attachment. We have to learn how to work with that level of attachment, and that's performance Tantra. And then in the yoga Tantra, it's like actually I said that wrong. In performance Tantra, it's like they're smiling at you. In action Tantra, you're just seeing somebody attractive. In performance Tantra, this other person's smiling at you, so now you feel better. In yoga Tantra, you're holding hands with the person. So you can see the level of attachment can kind of gradually moving up. And then in high sugar Tantra, which is, you know, what Kala Chakra symbolizes, and there are many other high sugar Tantra, what we call daddy practices, Yamantaka, Haruka, and Guhya Samaja are the main ones, plus Kala Chakra in the Galupa tradition that we work with. And at the Hash level, we work with the energy of sexual relations, of copulation, and the blissful energy that would arise from that. And without freaking out or developing clinging attachment, being able to use that blissful energy to focus the mind single-pointedly on reality and cut through the delusion. And sometimes I use the example of, like, you've got this wood and you start the fire, and then the fire ends up burning up the wood. So in this example, if I don't screw this up, the wood is like our attachment, and then the fire blazes up and consumes the wood, and that's like our wisdom being able to destroy any attachment. And what we're left with is a blissful wisdom consciousness focused on reality. Okay? So one of the key features in Tantra is called deity yoga. And that's what all of these Buddha figures are about. You know, some of you are aware of this, some of you not, but for example, Thousand Arm Chinrezig, which is over there, I don't know, you can't see it, but when you're here in the center, you'll see Thousand Arm Chinrezig. Well, Chinrezig, also called in Sanskrit Avalokiteshvara, and the Dalai Lama is said to be the human manifestation of this Buddha of compassion. And it's a thousand arms reaching out, in the palm of each hand is an all-seeing eye. And this Buddha, Chinrezig, thousand arm Chinrezig, is reaching out to suffering beings, trying to help them stop their suffering. And so if you are doing this practice called thousand arm Chinrezig practice, what you would have to do, this is why it's really important to understand emptiness, you would dissolve your ordinary sense of self into the space of emptiness. Okay? And then you would have this compassionate, because it's got to be motivated by bodhicitta or tantra goes really bad. It's like poisonous. Has to be motivated by compassion. So we cause this compassionate wisdom consciousness, which we have, our Buddha nature, we cause that to arise as thousand arms in Rasik. And then we identify ourselves not as this ordinary body, but as thousand arms in Rasik, with perfect wisdom, perfect compassion, no limitations. We can do anything. We can help any being in any situation to stop their suffering, and we can also guide them to supreme enlightenment. And we imagine that we are that now. We're taking our future enlightenment as a thousand arm chinrezig, which we think that could never happen, and we've dissolved ordinary dawn into the space of emptiness, and then cause. And if I was doing this practice, and once I got a really good sense that my ordinary identity had disappeared, and then I would arise as the deity. There's a lot that goes in. There's a lot that happens before you can practice any tantra, and that's just the beginning level of tantra we're talking about, the kriya or action tantra, but. To practice tantra, just to be, and like I said, one of the goals of this course is for you to find out if tantra is actually right for you. And maybe all it will be is that you'll have some aspiration, and it's good enough, by the way, because maybe in this life you won't get there, but maybe if you have the sincere aspiration to be able to practice tantra, then in some future lifetime, you may have the good fortune to meet a tantric master, to receive an empowerment. But the basic foundation for all of us to qualify to be a practitioner of tantra is to at least have some understanding of the three principles of the path. So everybody here knows what that is, right? The three principles of the path. Hello? Right? So I'm gonna say them for those of you who maybe don't remember them right off the bat. But the three principles of the path, we say renunciation, bodhicitta, and the correct view of emptiness. And then we can translate those words a little to make it even maybe a little bit more helpful. Renunciation is this determination to be free of suffering, is renouncing suffering and its causes. It's this determination to be free of suffering. And first of all, it is like the very first step on the path. And if we, again, I say, because I'm speaking from personal experience, I have, and I think a lot of us have, what I call a spiritual inferiority complex. We don't think we have the potential to stop our suffering. Maybe a little bit, and maybe just sometimes. And that's a good start, by the way. But renunciation actually comes from recognizing that we are suffering, that we, as Geshe-la, what's the word he like? Unsatisfactoriness. But hey, it's bigger than that, isn't it? It's like, and it's gone on from the beginning of beginningless time until now. This unsatisfactoriness that we call dukkha or suffering, sometimes translated in lots of different ways. So that's really having compassion for yourself. Like having compassion for yourself. I'm determined to be free from suffering. I want to be free from suffering. You want to feel that. And you have to, and to really feel it, you have to believe that you have the potential, at least some potential. And so we do, don't we? Just think about this. We all have a little bit of compassion. Maybe not a lot. We have some. We all have a little bit of wisdom. We all have a little bit of loving kindness. We all have, you know, the a little bit of power. We all have a little bit of the ability to know what to do in a certain situation to help other people. These are all some of the qualities that make up a Buddha. And so we all have some of that. And maybe it's just a baby. Maybe it's just in this infancy form. But it can be grown and developed and expanded infinitely. And that's the claim. That's the claim. And that's up to us. Well, I'll quote Lama Yeshe. I was fortunate enough to, Lama Yeshe, I took refuge from him, and he and Lama Zopa kind of yin-yang, my basic root gurus, along with His Holiness. And I feel, you know, a special, you know, relationship to these teachers. And, you know, anyway, you know, Lama Yeshe always said that, you know, we have this poor me, I can't do it, I can't do it. You know, we always have that really negative self-talk, self-image that sabotages our spiritual practice. And we have to give it up. We have to challenge it. And so that's renunciation, compassion for yourself, determination to be free, and some belief that you can do it. And that's based on recognition that we all have Buddha nature. We all have a little bit, we all have Buddha nature, and it can be grown and expanded infinitely. Okay? Then bodhicitta is more like having compassion for others, isn't it? It's like, you know, sometimes I like the way Jeffrey Hopkins described it. He says, you know, the point of practicing in the Mahayana tradition is I must help others. And how can I do that? I got to get enlightened. I got to get my act together. You know, I want to help others. I want to guide others from confusion to full enlightenment. And to do that, I have to develop myself. I have to eliminate my faults and develop my positive qualities. So sometimes, and it's based on sincere, not eerie theory, blah, blah, blah. But it's based on sincere love and compassion. Okay? It's based on genuine love and compassion that we set our aspiration on supreme enlightenment in order to help other beings. That's actually like having compassion for others, isn't it? And it's the best thing we can do for ourselves also, is to develop, to become a Buddha is like fantastic. So who wouldn't want to do that? But the only purpose from the Mahayana perspective, the great vehicle perspective of becoming enlightened, is so we can become the perfect guide for other beings. So that's bodhicitta. These are the requisites for practicing Tantra. And then the correct view of reality. We call it emptiness. And it's Lama Yeshe used to call it like it's like stripping away the paint. It's like stripping away our projections and seeing things directly as they are, minus our projections, which in fact are what? Just our karmic ripening. We're like a projector. Our mind, in this case, if I'm looking at something, it's my eyes are like a projector. And where did each of the frames of this projector come from that are creating the vision of what I call my life? They're coming from former actions, karmic imprints from former actions. Okay? There's no reality that exists independent of my mind labeling it. Think about that one. There's no reality out there that exists independent of my mind labeling it. Everything is empty of inherent, substantial, out there, in and of itself, existence. It is, everything exists in an interdependent fashion. There is data out there, no doubt. It's not, when emptiness is not saying nothing exists. It says, but our, that our mind is interacting with the data, is, and our perception is a process of interdependence, that we call dependent origination, that everything arises in dependence upon causes and conditions. It arises and comes into existence in dependence upon its parts that come together, and it rises and comes into existence for us in dependence upon the process of labeling. That's the most profound level of understanding Tantra. And so, you know, I've heard some teachers say that, you know, who we think we are is just a label. We've labeled ourselves as being this or that and not having the capability to become enlightened and so on and so forth. And some teachers say because we have Buddha nature, that the reality is that we're more like the thousand arms in Razik than who we ordinarily think we are. Think about that one. Because ordinarily we think we're flawed. We think we have so much judgment and so many, so much stuff about who we are. And yet who we really are is this being that has limitless potential and that can manifest in a way that can help universal living beings. Excuse me. So Tantra is about learning how to do that. And so nobody has any business practicing Tantra. I'll say it this way. And you don't have to have perfect understanding of this. You can just have admiration for these thoughts, renunciation, having compassion for yourself, bodhicitta, compassion for others, correct view of emptiness, seeing that our mind is constantly creating our reality, that there's no reality independent of our mind projecting it and labeling it. Having some feeling and basic understanding of these three is considered to be the very basic foundation that you would need to have to even hear the tantric teachings. And then of course, I'll say for me personally, when I first saw all these deities and stuff, you know, being raised Presbyterian, I guess once you're a Presbyterian, you're always a Presbyterian, but I'm a Buddhist too. But I remember, looking around and seeing all these deities and thinking, you know, I'm not in Kansas anymore. Because this is really weird. And what does it mean? And then when I began to understand that every aspect of these tantric deities have profound symbolic meaning, and it's like I tell people who visit Kadamba Center for the first time, I say, these things, everything in here has one purpose, and that's to help us transform our mind. And that's it. So every aspect of a tantric deity or Buddha figure that we have around here, every aspect of it has symbolic meaning. And we just have to study it and learn it and to be able to appreciate it. That's a whole nother game. All right. So then let me see if I have any notes here that I need to look at. In the Mahayana practice, we have the Sutrayana and we have the Vajrayana. Okay, we call it Vajrayana, diamond vehicle. And sometimes it's called secret mantra. Vajrayana, secret mantra, tantra, some other names. I can't remember right now, but when you hear the word secret mantra, you go, what? Why does it have to be secret? Well, when you look at Kala Chakra, for example, you can see how somebody might, or even any of these deity, these Buddha figures, you might have the wrong idea. You might come up with some misperception that this is just, I don't know, whatever your misperception might be. And so, and it might, and you might turn away, you may say, well, I don't want any part of that. And you turn away from Dharma practice altogether. And so, people have to be introduced to Tantra who have the basic foundation of the three principles of the path and some faith in the practice. And the best way for me personally, and I'm just speaking from my experience, the way that I have developed, and it's a process now. I mean, I am not there. I'm not cooked and baked, but what has given me the most confidence in Tantra is meeting and being around these amazing teachers, like His Holiness the Dalai Lama, who's a Tantric master. His main practice is Tantra. And Lama Yeshe, their main practice is Tantra. You know, 24/7. And I don't know, I'm just speculating. But this is, the teachings say that when you become a Tantric master, 24/7, you are continuously see yourself as a Buddha, as an enlightened being, and you're constantly manifesting aspects of yourself to the vast universes, helping beings in whatever situation they're in. But the point is, you see yourself as an enlightened being 24/7. So being around Lama Yeshe and Lama Zopa and His Holiness the Dalai Lama, all of these people, in my mind, are extraordinary beings. And they are the fruition of Tantric practice. So I think, well, you know, I mean, I don't think I'm really ready to practice Tantra at any great level, but I'm willing to be open to it because I want what they got, you know? Kind of like Harry met Sally. I want what she got. So in the same way, we want what the Dalai Lama has and what Lama Zopa has and what Lama Yeshe had and any of these, and what Geshe Gelug has, you know, that joy. Because Geshe Gelug is a Tantric practitioner too. You ask him about Tantra, he won't say a word about it. He doesn't like to talk about it. But that's his main practice. Let's see. We've done the four classes of Tantra. Oh, and of course, I've got some notes here that are just really brief. And Uncle George is coming in next week to really kind of finish everything off, but I will say this. We talked about, how Tantra is a resultant vehicle where we're taking our future enlightenment. And in Sutra, we don't think this way, but in Tantra, we do. We dissolve our ordinary sense of self, and we imagine that we are a Buddha now. Sounds wild, doesn't it? But we got to get rid of the ego. Got to get rid of our self-image, that concrete sense of Don, and Don can do this, and Don can't do that. This is my story, right? And all of these self-limiting beliefs, and then we dissolve everything into the space of emptiness, and then we imagine that we arise as a Buddha now, and we begin to practice using the process of visualization in the beginning. We imagine that we're a Buddha now, and we're in visualizing ourselves doing the various actions that a Buddha might do, such as helping people that have COVID-19 be cured. We go in there, we give them the medicine that they need, and they become cured, and we imagine that we cured them. And everybody with AIDS, and everybody that's suffering from anger and anxiety and fear about the upcoming election and what that might look like, and everybody, wherever they are in the entire universe, you know, a Buddha, you know, can manifest and stop this and help eliminate their suffering. So that's why we call it the resultant vehicle. Whereas Sutra is the causal vehicle, where we're creating the causes to become enlightened. And Vajrayana, or Tantra, we're taking the future result, our enlightenment, and bringing it into the moment. And again, living and practicing. It's like a dress rehearsal, but when we actually become enlightened. So it's kind of cool that way. All right? So that's one of the things. I've taught about four classes. Then there's to practice Tantra, you have to get in an empowerment or an initiation. Okay? And so that comes from a tantric master. Now, like, for example, many of you, I know have, or not only, I don't know who's out there right now, but I know a lot of you have had initiations probably from the Dalai Lama. Like if you went to Washington, D.C. 6 or 7 years ago and you participated in the Kala Chakra initiation, you know, you received that empowerment from the Dalai Lama. Well, you need, for any of these tantric practices, you have to get a permission to practice it from a qualified tantric master. Okay? That's the entrance to the, again, besides the understanding the three principles, even at the superficial level, we've got to have at least that. Then we need an empowerment from a qualified tantric master. And that, so that we call that an initiation. And then we talk about and then some of the practices that you do. Once you get the initiation, then your job. If you do a Hatha Yoga Tantra, in yoga and Hatha Yoga Tantra, you take the tantric vows. Okay, so you have to take these incredible vows, and they're so hard to keep. I mean, even Atisha said he breaks his tantric vows like drops of rain coming down. It's a constantly, tantric vows are very difficult to keep purely. But we can purify our negative karma, right? We can do that. But tantric vows are very difficult to keep, but you have to study it and understand it, and you cannot do that until you've had an empowerment into Hatha Yoga Tantra by a qualified tantric master. In the lower levels of Tantra, where you might practice Green Tara or Form Chinrezig or, you know, Dazunorm Chinrezig or whatever the practice is, or Manjushri for wisdom, Vajrapani for power. These are some of the Kriya Tantra or Action Tantra Buddha figures. You have to take the Bodhisattva vows to practice at that level. So the tantric vows are for the more advanced practices, and for the beginner practices of Tantra, you have to take the Bodhisattva vows. So that's kind of, and vows are really important. If you take a tantric initiation, then all of a sudden you have to do what's called, and there's one of them, here's one of them, this is called a sadhana. It's called a method of accomplishment, okay? And this one has to do with the forearm Chinrezig practice. And it's a ritualized guided meditation where, again, you dissolve yourself in the emptiness, you rise as the Buddha. Now, there are different ways to practice this. You can also do a front generation and not see yourself as the Buddha, but it's more powerful if you see yourself as the Buddha. So if you do this practice, you would do a sadhana practice every day. And you would take, and sometimes it might take 15, 20, 30 minutes a day to build up, you know, your familiarity with the practice. So then practicing sadhana, all the different Buddha figures have sadhanas that they practice.
Hey, Don?
Yes, ma'am.
Do you have a question?
Yeah.
They won't be able to hear me, I don't think.
We have a question.
So the question is, so when we have received an empowerment and are envisioning ourselves as a certain Buddha, is that considered a tantric practice?
I would say yes.
You might want to repeat the question.
I would say, you know, if you have the three principles, if you are a qualified, all right, so, you know, to qualify for Tantra, you know, you have to have an understanding of the three principles of the path. You have to have some, even if you don't understand it at the deepest level. You understand it enough and that you have an appreciation for it. And then you have to have some faith in that Tantra actually is a valid path and that it works. And that takes, you know, that's up to you. Lama Yeshe said, you know, it's up to you to prove that the teachings are valid. It's not up to me. I've already done my work. I already know the teachings work for me and they're valid. It's up to you to check it out. So it's up to us to check out, you know, the Vajra master, make sure that the tantric, that the teacher who's giving us the initiation is who he seems to be. And we, and our job, whether the teacher is a Buddha or not, this is another hard part about Tantra, by the way, is seeing the Vajra master, the person who's given the initiation, as a perfect, completely unflawed being. You can see there could be some problems there because, you know, there have been issues of, well, let's put it this way, abuse, you might say, because people have been a little careless in picking their Vajra masters, let's say. But this is somebody, in a perfect world, you would have checked out the Dalai Lama. He is who he seems to be, and you're willing to take the initiation from him. And from that moment on, your job is to see him as a perfect being. So if he picks his nose, that's a teaching for you. If he burps, anything that he does, whether it is obviously perfect or whether it looks flawed, your job is to not project flaws onto your Vajra master, but to see them as a Buddha now. And then they give you the empowerment. And they give you the permission. And the empowerment is literally a guided meditation into the practice of that deity. And if you, and so when you get involved in that, you're actually, if you've done all the preparation and you're doing this guided meditation, yes, you're practicing Tantra. Even during, I mean, George might disagree with me, but I think even during the initiation, it's a kind of tantric practice because you're visualizing yourself as a deity and you're visualizing various aspects. Some of them are very esoteric and difficult to explain and understand, but you're doing tantric practice. And then when you do your sadhana practice, for sure you're doing tantric practice.
Yeah. So Don, we do have another question before we wrap up, and the question is, if we already have Buddha nature, why do we need the initiation to acknowledge it and practice? What does the initiation convey that we don't already have in our Buddha nature?
Well, it's, you know, that's a great question. And if the person were here, I'd ask them, you tell me what the answer is. But, so we have Buddha nature, but how many of us believe it? I mean, we have that potential to become enlightened, but how many of us in our heart of hearts believe it? I mean, I'm saying we don't. You know, we have, I say we have a spiritual inferiority complex. We don't think we have that potential, but we do. And Tantra is a way for us to connect with Buddha nature. Because what's arising as the Buddha is our Buddha nature. And we're identifying with our Buddha nature as we see ourselves as this perfect, perfectly fully enlightened being who can help countless enlightened beings. And by the way, all the time we're seeing this being motivated by compassion, and we see that we are empty. Even as a Buddha figure, we are empty. The Buddha Chenrezig, formed Dazhenram Chenrezig, is empty. So we never lose track of our awareness of emptiness. So yeah, it's a good question. I mean, I think that we, if we can connect with our Buddha nature and live out of it, we wouldn't need tantric practice. We wouldn't even need Dharma, really, because we would be enlightened already. But now we need these skillful techniques, these methods that are 2,500 years old and have stood the test of time and produced some of the world's most extraordinary holy beings. It's like, hey, let's give this a chance. Why not? Let's just give it a chance and see. That's the invitation. I think that's the tantric invitation. So we're almost done. I was going to, I don't know how many people have this little book. You can download Vajrasattva Practice. This is a purification practice that, isn't this online on FPMT?
I think it is.
Yeah. You can download this practice. And it's a little booklet created by Lama Yeshe Wisdom Archives. Sometimes they have free copies of it in the lobby, but nobody ever comes to the center anymore. But you can download it off the FPMT website. And you can do this practice this next week. This is a tantric purification practice where what you're going to do you're going to imagine yourself, and if you could imagine yourself as a deity, it'd be fine, but you wouldn't have what's called divine pride of the deity, of yourself being the deity. George will talk more about that later, but you would just see yourself as like ordinary person, maybe that's a good place to start. And above the crown of your head is Vajrasattva, father and mother. And as you do the four opponent powers, you do reliance, and then you do regret, and then you do the remedy, and then you do the resolve, right? And so while you do it, part of the practice reliance on Buddha, Dharma, Sangha, and Bodhicitta. That's the first of the four opponent powers. The second one is regret. So really important before you do any kind of purification practice, bring to mind things that you've done that you really don't want to carry the karma around, and not even a second longer, but particularly into future lives. You want to eliminate the negative karma as soon as possible. That's the important thing to do is strong regret about negative actions of body, speech, and mind. And then the remedy is saying the Vajrasattva's 100-syllable mantra. Now, some of you have memorized it. Om Vajrasattva Samaya Manapalaya Vajrasattva Dinapatita. You know, some of you have memorized it. Great. You don't have to say it out loud. There are different ways to do mantras. You can say them silently, or you can say them so that they say in a retreat, you should say the mantra just so you can hear it, but if somebody was sitting next to you, they wouldn't hear it. You say the mantra, and then you visualize, as you do this, you visualize that Vajrasattva, father and mother above the crown of your head, and in the beginning, you visualize light and nectar completely pure. As you say it the first seven times, you visualize all the negative karma of your body is purified. Then the second seven times you say it, and that's like being flushed out, right? And the second time you say it, it's like you have a glass of water with dirt in the bottom of it. And you say it, and as the nectar enters our body, it completely fills us from the bottom up, and all of the negative karma of speech, okay, now we're purifying speech, it comes out in the form of dirt and stuff through the different orifices, the eye sockets and the ears and the mouth, and the nose. You visualize it. All the negative karma of speech is purified as you say it the next seven times. And the last seven times you say it, you visualize your body as the light and nectar enter the crown of your head. You visualize that your body is completely pure, which symbolizes your mind. Now your mind is being purified. But you imagine that your body is completely like made of light and completely purified. And now you're purifying the negative karma of mind. So doing Vajrasattva practice, if you do this, choose to do this practice at home, and this is what I invite you to do. If you want to do a tantric practice, you've been given permission to do it, and it's a high sugar tantra image. Lama Zopa chose that because it's the most powerful practice. Hashyoga Tantra is the practice that you will have to enter if you actually want to become a fully enlightened Buddha. So this is very cool because it is a Hashyoga Tantra image, and you visualize that your body and your speech and your mind are purified as you recite the mantra, and then. It's a guided meditation. It's very beautiful. It's easy to do, and it's a great way to go to sleep at night because you don't carry all the garbage from the day to bed, and you get a better night's sleep when you do it. So I want to thank everyone for your patience with me and me. I did exactly what I said I didn't want to do, which is to flood you with information, and this is just the beginning. But Venerable George will make sense of everything next week, and he is, he's a tantric practitioner. Having done that 3-year retreat was all tantra, so we're really blessed to have him to teach this class next few weeks, and then the last week of the class we'll do. I'm teaching that, and we'll do at least. This practice and maybe one or two other tantric practices. So we'll be more focused on the practice aspect. So Linda, do you want to say something?
Hi, everybody. Sorry about all the technical difficulties. Next time we're in here, I will bring my laptop because the computer that we normally use for streaming live doesn't have video and audio, or at least I can't figure out how to work it. So next time will be better, I promise. But I would say, in addition to the practice that Don was just speaking of for the week, I think you should probably also watch the video if you have time, since we were not able to see that, and Venerable George will be teaching the next 2 classes. So we won't be watching that video. And then, of course, if you access the information online for Discovering Buddhism program materials, you can scroll down a little bit and access the online readings as well for Module 13. So we look forward to seeing you next week, and with Venerable George zooming from somewhere else. I don't even know where he is. So thank you guys for coming tonight and joining us, and thank you for your patience.
Right, and last but not least, every Buddhist practice in this tradition should start out with the Mahayana motive, right? Bodhicitta motive. I must become enlightened in order to liberate all sentient beings, and it's based on sincere love and compassion. That's bodhicitta. So as much as we can, we always try to set that motive at the beginning, and at the end we acknowledge that we planted seeds, like we planted like bazillions of karmic seeds have been planted. And if your motivation for wanting to be here tonight and to practice is a good motivation, there's no doubt that those seeds will ripen into happiness. And so we should rejoice. We should dedicate whatever positive potential that we've created to not only our happiness, but the happiness of universal living beings, for the long life of our teachers, success of the Dharma, the success of our precious teachers and the Kadampa Center can continue to exist and serve our community of students. So thank you for your attention tonight, and I'll see you again in a couple of weeks, 4 weeks anyway. All right. Good night.
Good night. Thank you, Don.
Thank you, Don.
I don't know how to get out of this.
Thank you, Don.
Thank you, Don.
Oh, you're welcome.
Thank you, Don.
Thank you.
Thank you.
There's a comment. Don, you did great and clarified much that I previously had been wondering about. So thank you. Be kind to yourself and embrace that you know much to benefit all of us. Thank you for sharing it with us.
Thank you. I'm going to stop my video now.
Bye, everybody.